the politicians don't have the incentives to do things right. They don't have any incentive to reduce debt. They only have the incentive to keep on raising the debt ceiling. They don't have the incentive to make fiat currency a better currency than it is today. They have the incentive to do it worse. Bitcoin gave us one shot. It came, it was like a present from Satoshi.
You're listening to Because of Bitcoin, a podcast that shares the personal stories of how Bitcoin is having a real impact in people's lives, including mine. I'm your host, Mauricio Di Bartolomeo, the co-founder and CSO of Ledin. And without further ado, let's get started with today's story. In my experience, a person's ability or desire to understand Bitcoin is closely linked to a personal experience with either broken money or broken property rights. And there's parts of the world where money and property rights are more broken than in others. One such region is Latin America, where I grew up. As we've seen in recent years, Latin America has become the beacon of political progress when it comes to Bitcoin regulation. Just look at El Salvador and Argentina. And we didn't get there accidentally. High inflation rates drove people to Bitcoin out of necessity, and they continued using it because it solved the problem for them. Necessity itself is a great driver to find Bitcoin, but to accelerate adoption, we needed something else: educational content in Spanish. Over the years, many great Bitcoin educators have started producing more and more content in Spanish, but one of them stands out above the rest due to the clarity, thoroughness, and thoughtfulness of his content. That man is Lunaticoin, a pseudonymous podcaster that has built the most popular Spanish language Bitcoin podcast. I consider Luna to be one of my good friends, and it's one of the first podcasts that I recommend to anyone that asks me about Bitcoin content in Spanish. In this rare interview, I had the chance to get on the other side of the mic and ask him about his personal story, parts of which were new to me, even though I've known him for years. We discussed what were those life experiences that drove him to find Bitcoin, why he decided to start the show, and what it's been like to become a reference point for the Spanish Bitcoin community. I hope you enjoyed the chat as much as I did. Luna, amigo, what a pleasure to see you again.
Happy to be back in a recording with you.
I always love having a chat with what I consider to be good friends, and I consider you to be a good friend. So if you've listened to the show before, you know, the way I like to start the show is by asking people about their upbringing. What was it like growing up as a young Lunaticoin?
I have to say that I wouldn't change anything of my upbringing. It made me who I am, so I'm very proud of what I had. I always was curious about money since very young age, very. And I remember being maybe 6, 7, maybe more 7, 8. I kind of created communism with my grandmother. I was walking with her, and we were going buy bread like we did every morning when we were together in summer. And I was not understanding why we had to pay for bread. And I was not understanding why we couldn't like, okay, we do some kind of service, and then why don't we exchange our service for this bread? And why cannot all just not use money, no? So I was very curious about money since the beginning. When I was a teenager, I kind of created a market in the class. I like this idea of trying to make money. I cannot access like real money, so let's play with fake money. And I created kind of like an idea of let's do drawings of like spaceships, and then let's try to do like cool spaceships, and then we will buy and sell the spaceships between the class. So I kind of created a market. And I first realized that I needed a central bank. And I needed a central accounting book. And then I realized, okay, if I want to play this game of who can manage to make more money, we need a number that everybody will have at the beginning. We need like a beginning. Okay, let's have everybody will have 10,000 credits, let's say. And from now on, you can value your spaceships the way you want. And let's try to convince other people to buy these spaceships, you know? And then I realized that I needed like a central authority to keep track of the buys and sells of everybody in the class. So I didn't realize at that time that I was encountering the same problems that Satoshi was trying to figure it out. But it's funny, no? That all those stories, I think I I thought them again once I was in Bitcoin. I realized and I had this like aha moment, or like, oh my God, I was already thinking about those things.
That's I never knew that about you. And that's a really interesting story. To me, to share back, I remember distinctly my dad would talk a lot about money. One of the things that I remember was when my dad would speak, the numbers would change almost daily. Like he would talk in thousands one day, and then in the next month he would be talking in the millions, and then the next month he would be talking in the billions. And that kind of lit this fire to try to figure out what the hell was really going on. And I understood the problem, but I never thought that problem had a solution until I came across Bitcoin, where I figured that was a very valuable alternative. And so my question back to you is, I believe, I don't want to assume, that you grew up in a place that had relatively working money in the sense that it was not hyperinflating away. It was not necessarily broken. So aside from, was there an experience that kind of you think prompted this curiosity around money other than just wanting to get more of it?
Let's say that I have a lot of micro stories, like the ones that I just explained you. And this is what Morpheus in the Matrix movie tells to Neo, no? When they meet for the first time, Morpheus asks him, no? Like, Neo, I know why you are here. I know what's this thing that has been in your head, like a splinter in your mind, and that it's like killing you inside somewhere, more or less, no? And then Neo sees the Matrix, no? And say, exactly. You're coming here for answers. So money has been the splinter in my mind. I grew up in a non-broken economy. Despite now in perspective, I see a lot of broken events. For example, the euro transition was a moment that a lot of people should have stopped for a moment and realize what the heck is going on here. Of course, internet was not that wide at the time, was not that popular, and Twitter was not existing anymore. So I suppose that a lot of people was having these thoughts inside but not communicating them or not being able to realize that everybody was thinking about them. But Europeans and Spanish, Spaniards even more, we experienced a loss of purchase power, like a huge loss. In the moment we adopted euro, everything, we used to have pesetas, and our like very basic measure was 100 pesetas. From one day on, like when we adopted euro, it was not 100 pesetas anymore. It was everything for 1 euro. And okay, it was like a candid move for like on the text. It looked like, okay, 100 to one. It's a different currency, you know, but the truth was like 100 pesetas was 60 cents. So we changed, like our coffees used to cost 100 pesetas and it started to cost 1 euro. Now it's even more, no? So there was a moment in which everything went up like 30%. Not everything, the small things, but everything rapidly changed. So yeah, I have experienced these kind of things. And another little story that all my life was in my head and nowadays it still is. Of course, now I understand. But I grew up as a teenager starting to go to cinema and paying 6 euros for a ticket. And this was 1,000 pesetas. 1,000 pesetas, 6 euros is 1,000 pesetas. And I remember my mother saying, oh, I was going to the cinema paying 15 pesetas for the ticket. And I was not understanding it. My mind was like not able to understand it. I was like, well, why? Why I have to pay 1,000? You know? So this was something that I always had it. And now I understand. Thanks to Bitcoin, now I understand.
It's fascinating to hear you say that because most people don't assume that Europeans have gone through a currency conversion. But that's exactly what the transition to the euro was. I find that this concept of your currency changing in value drastically overnight shocks you in the way that it shocked me. People have a lot of questions around why inflation is 2 to 3%. I think to me, the very simplistic view is that is how much it can change without you noticing. And that's been sort of tried and tested over time. So people within 2 to 3% people don't complain. Between 3 to 5, people get angry. Between 5 and 7, you get a revolution. And so this is what they go back to. This 2 to 3%, I think it's just pinned into this concept of the frog in the boiling water. It's like if you gradually increase the frog's temperature, it boils. It has no idea. It'll die. But if you move it fast, you give it a chance for it to start questioning what the hell's happening in this water and jump out. And so it's remarkable that even as far as Europe, you have these events that happen and they stay with you. Many Venezuelans kill themselves to go move to Europe because they think it's perfect and it has no issues. And I think this is a very good example of, you know, everybody has faced unfairness when it comes to money in some way or another.
Yeah, and only Bitcoin cures you from that. I suppose that people that has been into gold for a long time, they also knew what was happening. So there was a chance to be awake already. So it's not an excuse to not be awake before Bitcoin. And being digital, it's kind of like allowed a lot of businesses, places where you can pay with Bitcoin. That, of course, I know that in Venezuela, even nowadays, there are some mining regions where you can buy things with gold. I know that. But it's not so, it doesn't make it easy for you to believe this idea. And I'm a gold defender. I'm, of course, how I'm going to say anything wrong about gold if it's a lot better than fiat. Let's say that I see where Bitcoin is better than gold. And I believe that Bitcoin makes it easier for people to adopt and for people to see that they will have something easier to use whenever they want to use it. Because some people think that buying Bitcoin is like a dead end. It's like they got into a cul-de-sac. Oh, I'm not, okay, I just lost 100 euro or I just lost $1,000 that I put into Bitcoin. No, first of all, you can sell back. And second of all, you can use it. You can use it in many ways that will show you what real freedom and economic power means. And you can spend it also. You can use things like BitRefill. You can spend it in many other places and just enjoy it. Enjoy it.
Bitcoin is often described as digital gold because of its fixed supply. However, Bitcoin is much more than that. Comparing the two is like comparing a horse-drawn carriage to a Tesla. It's not just fixed supply. You can store and safekeep Bitcoin more efficiently than gold. You can send it and receive it faster and much cheaper than gold. You can divide it almost infinitely to fractions of a US dollar cent or consolidate it into a multi-billion dollar transaction, all without needing to melt anything. Now, back to Lunaticoin's journey with Bitcoin. At what part of your journey does Bitcoin come into your life?
For you to understand what kind of person I was. I had a business on my own with workers and so on. But nevertheless, I love the game. I love the game of money and I love the game of flipping. I think it's how it's called in English, of buying something and selling it, like putting a markup or finding a nice deal and just reselling. And I thought, I like to do this because I like to feel the tension of the negotiation and so on. But I want to do it with something that I like. So I was flipping video games and retro consoles like the first Nintendos and so on. This was my weekend. So I had my company and then it was, okay, Saturday morning, I'm going to this place in Barcelona. I know there is some people I'm going to negotiate and I will try to flip it. No? And in that time, I was very intense in reading about technology and about also like video games, old video games and stuff. And then I got across one of my everyday blogs, the ones that I was reading every morning, they were talking about Bitcoin. And I denied Bitcoin in 2013 because I thought it was a scam. And how come something that is digital that you can copy paste as many times as you want, as everything I knew. So how come it's going to be costing $1,000 as it used to be in 2013? And this I is not my imagination. I have a written conversation that I found later on, in fact, with a family member, and we were joking about Bitcoin. Like, look at this. These people is crazy paying 1,000 euros for something digital. And in 2017, when I saw it reaching $1,000 again, I said, okay, this crazy people is back again into this. Okay, and I ignore it again. 2017, beginning. And then in a month or less, it reached $2,000. And I say, okay, people cannot be that crazy. I'm missing something out. And I am the money person. So I am missing something out here. So I bought. I went and I bought a bit because I was also not very confident about it. And I wanted to see what is it like. And oh my God, I found the rabbit hole and I haven't gone out since then.
When people think broken money, the images that come to mind are Venezuela, Zimbabwe, Argentina, the Weimar Republic, and others. However, broken money is everywhere throughout history. And believe it or not, Lunaticoin experienced his money break-in in Spain during the early 2000s. This was when the euro replaced the official Spanish currency at the time that he had grown up with, the peseta. While many see the euro as a stable currency, the citizens of Europe experienced massive changes to their purchasing power during the monetary transition, to the point where it severely impacted the quality of life in some countries. This experience left a mark in them, which later helped them understand why Bitcoin was so important. You have been a very big advocate of education, of self-custody, and of privacy. And so I want to tackle those three pillars of your project or your brand. So can you explain a little bit in whatever order you want, why you see so much value in those things?
I was a NIM at the beginning because I had my company. So I wanted to separate these two profiles. It was not a decided, it's not because I was a privacy advocate at the time. I became, but I was not at the beginning. That was a lucky move from my side. Education was a selfish move. As I said, I was falling down Bitcoin's rabbit hole and I was learning so much and I was having such a fun. And for me, it was incredible that all those explanations, sometimes they were hidden, sometimes they were English only, and I wanted to share that knowledge. I don't know, at the time, there was some podcast, but it was not like as it is today, that there is plenty. No, I thought, I want to still be hidden, so podcast maybe suits me. Another lucky move, because of my situation. And then I started education because of that, like a way of to compact knowledge that I was discovering for me and sharing it with people. People liked it, so that was good. And that allows me nowadays to live from that. When I discovered Bitcoin, it was not an automatic thing. First, it was the greedy part from my side. And I was playing with shitcoins and everything. And then I had the click. And I realized, this feels so good. This feels so free, not as in without cost, no, as of freedom. And then I read Atlas Shrugged from Ayn Rand, and there was no way back. Everything clicked, and I say, okay, now I understand how we got to the system we have nowadays. And the politicians don't have the incentives to do things right. They don't have any incentive to reduce debt. They only have the incentive to keep on raising the debt ceiling and raising and raising. They don't have the incentive to make fiat currency a better currency than it is today. They have the incentive to do it worse. So with all this, I said, okay, Bitcoin gave us one shot. And it wasn't an unexpected shot. It came, it was like a present from Satoshi. As I said, I had my own company as a money person. I thought that was my end goal, to have a company, to grow as much as I could, to have as many colleagues, workers, collaborators, however you want to call it, and to be big, you know, like this is how it felt it had to be. But oh my God, I was struggling. I was struggling in many ways. I was struggling with the state, with the government, with not even taxes, I would say bureaucracy. I was like not understanding why I had to lose. Because of course, I wanted people I was paying a salary, I wanted them to be productive. I wanted them to focus in making the business work. So I was taking care, no worry, I'll take care of bureaucracy. No worry, I'll take care of, you know, of the things that nobody wanted to do. Or nobody should do. This is the thing, maybe nobody should do. As I have as I have seen what we have, and as I know what we already have, and all this awful bureaucracy, I'm going to push for this shot as hard as I can. And for me, this shot is self-custody, is in a very specific way, defying the wrongdoing of our politicians. Because our politicians have all the power to destroy Bitcoin. And it is not by forbidding it, by trying to put people in jail. No, no, no. If they start doing things right today or tomorrow, we can give them 24 hours rest. But if they start doing things right tomorrow and they make fiat currency, or they make dollar what used to be before the creation of the Fed, then Bitcoin will struggle a little bit. I don't say that Bitcoin will disappear. I'm saying that Bitcoin will struggle, because then Bitcoin will have to find reasons and will have a very strong competitor with all the network effect. So that's why I know that they are not going to do this. That's my point. I'm going to push, and I'm going to specifically show how big of a parasites they are and how incapable of managing properly anything.
I echo what you're saying. You know, Saifedean has a similar viewpoint. In an interview with Lex Fridman, Lex asks Saifedean, what would you think is the most likely reason that Bitcoin could ever fail? And the reason Saifedean gave, which I thought was fascinating given your answer, is that the only thing that would stand in the way of Bitcoin is that governments all of a sudden get their act together. And there is no longer any need for Bitcoin, because they start acting so responsibly, and they stop running deficits, and they stop using the Cantillon effect to make their buddies rich. That is a sort of dark scenario. And it revolves into a sort of dark place, because you think they're never going to get their stuff right. And Bitcoin's ultimately, there's just going to be this big war between them never getting it right and the Bitcoiners that are virtuously escaping, right? And so in your mind, there has to be, at least I would believe, a happy ending. There's got to be a point on the road where Bitcoin is able to pressure the system into changing for the better. So is that what you believe? How do you see Bitcoin impacting the system and hopefully getting us back on the rails?
What I think will happen is that Bitcoin will just prove them that they cannot trick people anymore. So it's kind of like the kids are not kids anymore. Another metaphor that I like to bring, and this is also a very personal one, because it's a book that really created a mark on me when I read it. It was Dorian's, like, Gray's Portrait. You know, this is a book about like a rich man that he always wants to be nice looking and handsome. But of course, you cannot fight time. And he was a very mean person. And then somebody does him a portrait. And then he kind of like gets a pact with the devil or whoever, that he will never get ugly, he will never get old, but the portrait will. One day he realized that the portrait is starting to be very ugly, you know, because his soul is ugly. But he's very handsome. So he keeps on tricking people. Okay? So he starts to realize that people will see the portrait. So he hides the portrait in the basement and for nobody to see. But he becomes a monster in the portrait. Meanwhile, he's still being a charming prince. For me, Bitcoin is taking the portrait of the governments and just sticking it up in the sky for everybody to see. And it's like, you can keep being yourself. It's okay. We know you're ugly. It's okay. We know now. And we have a tool, finally, to protect ourselves. And the beauty of Bitcoin is there is a tool that it's all like protected by a number. I also, since more or less like a year ago or something like that, we started to do like some courses on the weekend to like a little amount of people. And we teach like Bitcoin custody. As you said, I'm passionate about that. And why not sharing that knowledge? And the first thing I say in the first day is like, Bitcoin is a number. And it all starts with a number. It's not like the story that we have in Spanish, I suppose, is the same in English, the chicken and the egg. No, what was first? In Bitcoin, we know what is first. The first thing is a number. And from a number, you create everything. From a number, you create the public key of that number through elliptic curve cryptography. You create the public key, and the public key, you compress it in an address. That's it. That's all you need in Bitcoin. You want to forbid Bitcoin, you have to forbid mathematics, or you have to forbid numbers. No? So the beauty of Bitcoin is that everybody knows that they are ugly, and they don't have anything to stop us because they have to forbid numbers. So good luck with that. Good luck with that.
I love Lunatic Coin's analogy of Dorian's portrait, as it could not be more relevant to the economic landscape that we're in today. You may have heard the term shrinkflation float around, or Biden complaining about it during a very expensive Super Bowl ad this year. Governments do this because they don't want to tell people, we printed a lot of money and the dollars you get paid are now worthless, and you can afford less Doritos because of it. It's much easier for them to say, oh my god, look at Frito-Lay, they want to make more profits. It's frustrating to watch. The fact is that this is an economic issue that starts at the top with money printing, with the same politicians that are now complaining about the problems they've helped create. As Luna said to me,
it's like the spoiled kid in the school, that when you point him out, like, you did this wrong, he always says, it's not my fault. It's somebody else's fault.
He does a fantastic job of building on concepts like these in his own podcast, which is something I was curious to learn more about. So for those who don't know, you run the most popular, the most thorough, the most eloquent podcast for Bitcoin in Spanish. And I've had the pleasure of being on a few times. The quality of your show, the thoroughness of your questions, the level of preparation that you put into your shows is admirable, is honestly second to none. What have been some of your more memorable points? And was there ever a point where you said, wow, I'm having an impact on people?
There have been many moments that I thought, wow, how in the world I'm talking with this person, and it's happening, and it's amazing talk. You know, it's not like this person I was seeing on TV and now it's in my show and I'm talking with him or her, and it's like, oh my god. Let's say that at some point you kind of get used to this and you realize, like, okay, I more or less can talk with everybody. I had plenty of moments. I suppose it's going to be hard to find some, but I have some special ones. I remember I'm doing my podcast that is a weekly show, and I really prepare them, as you were saying. But then sometimes when I'm going to conferences, I'm doing kind of like a daily show, like with I call it like a podcast blog, because it's basically that, me and Mike going everywhere. Like, if I'm in a dinner and I'm getting a bit drunky with some wine with other Bitcoiners, it's recorded. If I go to, you know, like in a dinner between, like a private dinner with Bitcoiners, of course they know that I'm taking out the mic and I'm starting record. It's not like I'm publishing secrets, but it's kind of like bringing people into our intimacy, you know? And I remember, like, there was a moment that for me was very special in El Salvador. I was like in this first year after the approval of Bitcoin, 2021. And I remember being in Bitcoin Beach. It was a sunset, and I don't know. I've been, and you know this feeling of being the crazy one who is in Bitcoin. Now it's cool to be in Bitcoin, but for many years you were like kind of like between a nerd and a crazy person. Something like that, like insane person, like with this internet magic money thing, like people was looking at you like, oh, this guy, you know? And then like having had all this criticism or commentaries from family, like, do you think you're doing good with your life? Like putting your life into this and so on. And then in El Salvador, it's kind of like everything unraveled on me. You know, it's like I was in Bitcoin Beach. I was experienced like a lot of days just paying in Bitcoin. I traveled from another continent. I didn't have to exchange currency. I was using Bitcoin as money there. And I couldn't hold myself. I kind of like went into tears in the mic. But it was something natural. It came from me. And that was very special, not for what I felt that it was special, but how the audience reacted to that. You know, how the day after, people was telling me, I was crying in my car. listening to you. Or so I think that, of course, it's amazing to talk with people that you admire, but it's more amazing to connect with your audience and then be able to meet them afterwards, to these other peers, that they are like more silent Bitcoiners, but nevertheless, you share the same feelings, the same fears, the same criticism from family, and to be able to share those feelings, to connect with them, and then later on to meet in conferences and so on, this is the most special thing I take with me.
That's beautifully said. One of the reasons that we connected was that when I was going to these conferences in Latin America, so many people came up to me and said, you need to do a show with Ornate Coin because your business is changing the world and it's very difficult. Like it's a beautiful business, but it's hard to understand and it's hard to explain. And he breaks things down better than anyone. If Lunatic Coin does a show about your business and your product, everyone will get it. And this happened to me not once, but three times, to the point where I think I sent you a message on Twitter and I said, hey, Luna, we have to chat. Like, you know, I love your pod and I've been hearing great things. And then we connected but it all came from the love that you put into the show. And I think that when people say, you know, how do you make yourself interesting? You make yourself interesting by doing something you love. Because when you do something you love, it's infectious. Like it's the passion just comes across. I particularly love the one about Order 1602 that you did with, what was our guest's name? That was
Daniel.
Phenomenal. If somebody listening wants to get started in their Lunatic Coin journey and wants to discover your content, is there a show you recommend them starting on?
First of all, they can ask me. I'm reachable, so they can just write me. And some people reach me that they are English speakers, that they start to learn Spanish, and they manage to listen to my shows, and they ask me, what can I listen? And I always ask to people or tell people, just follow your curiosity. So like read the titles and just jump in the one you like. My content use normally, I would say 90% is evergreen. So it doesn't matter when you listen to it. And then I have in YouTube, I have different playlists, for example, for beginners or economic topics or cypherpunk topics. So if you are more interested in any of those, you can go directly there. I'm really into monetary topics also, and the history of money is one of my the things that I like to study and talk about aside of Bitcoin. So there are a lot of magic podcasts about those topics. And if somebody's interested, I will be happy to tell them which one they should listen to.
To anyone here, you know, if I could describe your approach to podcast, I think you're the closest thing to Tim Ferriss in Bitcoin. It takes these topics that are wildly complex and alien to a lot of people. And he breaks it down in a way that is so easy to understand. And so I think you do a very similar thing with a lot of Bitcoin concepts. And so I would encourage anyone to listen and to go find your show and your website. And where can they find your show and your website? And where can our guests follow you?
I think it's the easiest is this Lunatic Coin in Twitter. This is where I am. That's all the links are there and they can start from there. And of course, Spotify and so on, if they want to listen to my shows or Fountain, whatever, YouTube, I'm there.
Luna, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Thank you for bringing me in. It was a pleasure.
There are certain people in my life that emanate happiness and passion. When you ask them about their job, their eyes light up. By now you've heard the saying, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. I've always nodded when I heard this, because once I found Bitcoin and started working on it, my life changed for the better. I went from counting the hours in my previous job to feeling like there are not enough hours in the day to learn about Bitcoin and build products here at Ledin. I say this now because I think Lunatic Coin is a great example of how following your passion will lead you to the happiest version of yourself. He became passionate about Bitcoin and started the show as a way to open source and share his research with the world at large. His dedication and passion comes across in the show. Sprinkle some consistency and resilience in that mix, and you have the recipe for long-term success. The Bitcoin industry is young and growing. This tent will only get bigger. If you're passionate about it, put in the time and effort to learn. If you feel like building or creating something, do it. Don't wait. I may not know you, but I know that Bitcoin needs you. If you're interested, I've linked Luna's podcast along with my favorite episode in the show notes. Make sure you check it out and subscribe. Thank you all, and we'll be back soon with another great episode of Because of Bitcoin. If you enjoyed this Because of Bitcoin episode, I would be very grateful for the 5 seconds it would take you to drop us a review and give us a rating on your favorite podcasting platform. This will really help us reach even more listeners. And if you'd like to learn more about Bitcoin, be sure to check out our newsletter by subscribing at ledn.io. That's ledn.io. Again, this was Mauricio Di Bartolomeo. Stay tuned for our next episode. And until then, muchas gracias y los quiero mucho. Ciao, ciao.